Welcome, 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 beloved listeners, to another week of LNL. I hate to do this to you, having had to endure, all of us have had to endure the election campaign, but we're going to be discussing another election. We're going to be discussing the German election, one in which Germans are showing precious little interest thus far. But as you'll learn from my three guests, it's a very significant event coming up on September the 22nd. The Democratic Republic of Timor-Leste became the first new nation of the 21st century, and from that moment, those who fought for independence have faced a challenge even bigger than shaking off the Indonesian occupation, running a country of their own. And I'll be introducing you to George Peake, who's written a charming memoir on the years he spent in Timor-Leste. I'm going to make just one comment on the election, which I think has been remarkably overlooked. I want to borrow the term bump from Stephen Colbert. Please observe that the Murdoch bump really didn't happen, even in the catchment area for his Sydney papers. It did not lead to a huge swing against Labor at all, nor did it in Queensland, in both Queensland and Victoria, and New South Wales, and even in Victoria, the swing was nothing like people anticipated. But it's that Murdoch factor which I find incredibly interesting. I don't think that Tony Abbott owes Rupert a thing. Let's look at what we're going to call the new German question. In one of the more uneventful elections thus far on record, and a large number of German voters are maintaining their indecision until the dying hours of September the 22nd, ahead of the elections for the European Parliament in May next year. However, the German elections are also taking place in the foreground of a now familiar debt-driven question. Can Germany guide the EU to recovery without becoming the reluctant schoolmaster of Europe? 23 years after the fall of the wall, this question is a compliment to the expanded federal government of Germany. Not only did it absorb the demanding costs of unification, but since 2003, it also made progressive economic reforms, lowered labour costs by consensus, and restored much of its global competitiveness. But the German federal election will have repercussions for people far, far beyond her borders, in particular, southern European nations. Now, on today's program, we have cast a wide net. We're joined from Wyoming in Texas by Professor Tanya Bertzel. Tanya's the chair and director of the Center for European Integration at Berlin's Free University. From Berlin, I'd like to welcome Gordon Rapinski, an editor for Der Spiegel magazine and former parliamentary correspondent for TAS. And with me in Sydney, our regular, Satyajit Das, who I tweeted about Das the other day, said that he was our GPS throughout the GFC. I thought that was rather nice, Das. He is, of course, an economist, risk expert, and author of Extreme Money and Traders, Guns and Money. And I welcome the three of you to our little wireless program. Gordon, to you first. You've been following the party campaigns over the summer. We'll leave the recent television debate between Merkel and Steinbrück for a moment. What have been some of the key themes?
Yeah, well, very surprisingly, it's not the NSA or it's not the Euro crisis. In Germany, it's rather the topic of social fairness, which at least the Social Democratic Party tries to push. There is housing and rent prices which are rising, wages, and also taxes is a big topic. The Social Democrats want to increase the tax rates for rich people. The Christian Democrats doesn't want to have that. So these are actually the topics which are really important right now. And overall, it's also a question of two personalities, of Angela Merkel, who's the Chancellor right now and who's rather consensus-oriented, at least within Germany, and the rougher character of Peer Steinbrück, who's the competitor.
I know you've made the observation that most of us have made about our election, that the campaigns have been overstage managed, wooden, and apparently content-free.
I wouldn't say it's content-free. It's as I said, the social fairness is a big topic that the Social Democrats are pushing. But then again, there is the Chancellor, who is also interested in finding a consensus between the parties, because then she hopes that the majority of the population would want everything to be just the way it is before, and he's going to be re-elected like this.
Gordon, in a recent article you co-authored, you found that almost a third of all voters seem to be waiting for the final week to decide whether they'll vote, and if they do, who they'll vote for. How has that affected party tactics?
Well, first of all, it's Merkel's trauma, because she's leading the polls right now and she's hoping to be re-elected. But then again, in the two last elections, she has lost voters on the last meters. So it's also the hope of the Social Democrats. And the Social Democrats are organizing a lot of big events in the last weeks. They have a so-called 72 hours countdown. They go from door to door. They wanted to visit 5 million households. I think it's 3 million households only in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So it's a huge thing that's going on in the last week, and a huge hope of the Social Democrats that things will change.
And of course, they're holding back a lot of the TV spots, aren't they, for a final bombardment.
Exactly.
Darcy, you wanted to comment?
Yeah, Gordon, one of the interesting things in what you're talking about is the campaign is kind of a negative campaign, because the major parties have particularly tried to keep any issue about Europe, particularly those raised by the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland Party. So it seems to be like a strange campaign to let's keep the AfD, A, below the 5% so they won't get into parliament, and B, not to raise the whole Euro issue. Do you have a comment on that?
First of all, I wouldn't think that it's already decided if the AfD will enter the parliament or not. The polls say right now it's 3%. So they wouldn't enter the parliament, but then again, it's very hard to measure if they can really make it or not, because usually you say when you call somebody and ask who will you vote for, they would rather not say I vote for AfD, but rather decide it in the last moment. So that's very hard to say. And then when it comes to the differences between both bigger parties concerning Europe, basically there is no big difference. Even Angela Merkel and Per Steinbrück, they both stick to the idea of the European Union, and they both also know that in the end Germany has to invest money and help the southern European countries, also because Germany is dependent on a well-functioning European Union and on a well-functioning European market.
This is LNL on RN, and we're discussing the new German question. Soon you'll be hearing from Tanja Bertzel, who's the chair and director of the Center for European Integration at Berlin's Free University, although on this occasion we'll be talking to her in Wyoming. You've already heard from Gordon Rapinski, an editor of Der Spiegel and a former parliamentary correspondent for TAS. He's the author of The Undecided, How Merkel Could Lose. And we also have our regular in Sajita Das. I must ask you in parenthesis, Gordon, to tell me about a penguin called Alexandra.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually a nice small animal, or not small, but animal who's in northern Germany. And actually, Angela Merkel is the aunt of this animal. And actually, it's in her constituency, and it's exactly where she's going to hold her last speech just before the election will come in September.
Now, to complicate what we're discussing, for the first time in post-war German history, I understand, Gordon, that Bavaria will hold its state elections 1 week before the nationals. What's that going to do?
So first of all, Bavaria is very special. It's a very independent country within, or a federal state within Germany. The election results are very different to most other elections in Germany, which means that the Conservative Party is very strong in Bavaria, and the SPD hardly exists. So for decades, the Conservatives are ruling Bavaria, and the SPD is trying everything what they can try, but they never really succeeded. And this will not change this time. So it's a very special election in that case. But there is something that can happen, which is that the Liberals, or let's say Merkel is worried that the FDP, the Liberals, might not clear the 5% hurdle needed to enter the state parliament there. And that in turn could motivate several conservative voters to cast their ballots for the FDP out of tactical reasons to make sure the FDP managed to jump the 5% hurdle in the national election. And this is a fear of Merkel.
Tanya, you see some weak spots for the German economy, starting with the cost of the shift in energy policy after abandoning its own nuke program following Fukushima. Germany's industrial energy costs are some 40% above those in France. Germany trying to be a European model for sustainability, perhaps to its own detriment?
Well, first of all, good morning, everyone. Well, yes, I think the point is I would like to make is that the solution to the euro crisis is not only about structural reforms in Southern Europe, but Germany's economy will have to reform too. And the change in our energy policy is certainly one aspect. And it has also been subject to the current election campaign, because the SPD has, the Social Democrats have promised to do something about the rising electricity costs. It's not only about industry. This is what the conservatives try to protect, whereas the SPD, the Social Democrats, are very much pushing for not lowering prices and electricity prices for the citizens, but at least making sure that they don't rise any further. And again, it comes back to what Gordon said, that this campaign is very much about the question of social fairness and who has to bear the costs of any kind of reforms we are having in Germany, be it the broader economic reforms or reforms caused by the switch in our energy policies.
Thus, you're unconvinced by Merkel's message to the German public that they're living in a prosperous, recession-proof nation. And you're puzzled by the fanfare over their international success in exports.
Well, it's interesting. I was sort of reading Buttonbrooks again, which is Thomas Mann's famous novel, and there's a lovely sort of phrase in that which captures Germany's state today. And as you know, it's a novel about a well-to-do North German family, which is in decline. And there's this wonderful phrase, "I know that the outwards visible and tangible signs and symbols of happiness and achievement often only appear when in reality everything already is starting to go downhill again. The outer signs take time to appear, like the light of a star which shines most brightly when it's on its way to being extinguished or maybe already has gone out." And I think that just about captures Germany today. And to pick up your point on exports, the most fascinating thing is everybody thinks Germany is this export powerhouse, and it is, but it's a very strange export powerhouse because it's almost completely dependent on Europe. 70% of its exports go to Europe. I actually went and looked at its 2012 figures just out of curiosity. Firstly, it runs a massive deficit to places like Norway, Libya, and Russia, which is understandable from what Tanya was saying. They're energy importers. And then you look at places like China and Japan, because the Germans keep saying, well, we are targeting emerging markets. They run a massive trade deficit with China, for instance.
And yet, Das, if you go to Beijing, you're run over by an endless succession of Audis and Mercedes.
Absolutely. But the real interesting issue is they obviously import more than they export there. And the most interesting thing is their biggest trade surplus is with the rest of Europe. And the two big markets there are Spain and Italy. And clearly, they're going to have some problems. Then you look at the next stage, which is say, okay, well, what's the potential cost of this crisis, which has to do with their financial strength? Everybody thinks the German economy is huge. It's not. It's about 2.5 trillion euros, which is large but not huge. Their total savings pool is somewhere around 4 to 5 trillion. And if you actually look at the German economy itself, it has high debt. It's got 81% debt. It's got very bad demographics, because in 1970, for every retiree, there were 4 workers. Today, it's about 3. and by 2050 it'll be 2, which is almost the same as Japan. So they've got all these structural weaknesses, and everybody keeps turning around and saying, well, the Germans will pay the bill. And I just can't see that they can actually bear the costs of the transfers that they will have to pay to the rest of Europe to keep it going.
Tanya, there are other limitations on Merkel's ability to write out checks. Two institutions, the Federal Bank and the Constitutional Court. What's been the relationship between the Feds and the European Central Bank of late?
I'll come to that in a moment. I just want to comment on what Darcy said. I think he's right. Germany has some structural problems we need to address, also to make the euro work. But the problem for Merkel currently is that Germans are actually quite satisfied with the situation, right? 70% of the Germans say they are satisfied with the current economic situation. So the general perception is that Germany is doing fine, it did its homework, and it's the other member states, particularly in the south, that have to engage in significant reforms. That is a major problem for any government in, you know, initiating further structural reforms, because Germans just don't see that they have a problem. Now, the central bank and the Federal Constitutional Court, it's absolutely, the German central bank, it's absolutely right what you said, that they are sort of veto players, the Federal Constitutional Court much more than the Bundesbank, the central bank, because so far the Bundesbank has been grudging about Merkel's policy, particularly with regard to giving more powers to the European Central Bank, which ironically speaking has been modeled on, you know, on the Bundesbank. An independent central bank is something which is very crucial to the German model and has been, some people would argue, imposed on the rest of Europe as the price for Germany giving up its beloved Deutschmark. But the key veto player in Germany really is the Federal Constitutional Court, which luckily so far has time and again grudgingly approved the policies of the federal government, essentially delegating more powers to the European level, particularly to the European Central Bank, without, you know, changing the constitution, something they have asked for time and again, is that the buck stops here. This is as much powers as we can transfer to the European level without changing our constitution. So we'll have to see what the room of maneuver is for any German government in the future with regard to delegating even more powers in terms of a fiscal or banking union to the European level without touching our constitution.
Gordon Rapinski, are you happy with that analysis?
Yeah, well, I also think that the European issue will be a big thing anyways. I would add one point, which is the demographic aspect is very important, and it's going to be a big risk if you regard to the future. But in presence, it's a very it's a thing that is either, which is rather positive for the economy, because there are not so many young people entering the labor market right now, which makes the thing much easier, and the unemployment rates are also decreasing because of that reason. So it's a very particular time right now, and that will change in a couple of years, and every government will have to find a solution for that.
But Gordon, one of the things that you were touching on but didn't sort of elaborate on is the big changes that Schroeder brought about. Because with the aging population, there's a huge problem as well, because the younger workforce, about 30% of it, don't get the benefits of the rest of the workforce. They basically are employed on contracts and have relatively low income, and the guest workers fit into that category. So the purchasing power domestically within the economy is actually shrinking as well.
That's true, and also it will be a very, very big problem for this generation you were talking about when they get older and when they are at the point where they see, well, I never really invested in my old age pension, and I will not get money for that. But this is a problem of the future, and I don't think very many people here in Berlin, there's a lot of there's a huge young workforce, but I don't think that these people really think about this problem right now.
I'd like to go back to you, Tanya. There's some interesting independent parties in the electoral race, the Eurosceptic Alternative for Germany, and the Pirate Party, that of which people say that it's got a platform. Are they, and to some extent, they've gathered force out of the Blockupy movement. Are they going to be significant to any extent?
Now, that is one of the big surprises to me, at least, that the Pirates are not You know, they're not doing well at all. And given that, you know, with the NSA scandal, that would be a topic they could have been thriving on, which they don't, partly because a lot of Germans don't really care that much, partly because the party in itself, and I think that also applies to the Alternative for Germany, internally has so many problems that, you know, to many voters, they don't appear as a party that is actually capable of, we're not talking about governing, but at least of representing their interests in parliament. So the pirates don't even feature as an extra party anymore in the surveys. They sort of collapsed under other parties, right? As Gordon already said, the Alternative for Germany, again, given that the euro crisis doesn't feature that prominently in the debates because the Social Democrats and the Conservative Party mostly agree on these issues, and the German Chancellor Merkel is so popular precisely because people think she's done quite a good job in managing the crisis, that there is no point on campaigning on that. The Alternative for Germany doesn't. I would be very surprised if it jumped the 5% hurdle and
made it. Tania, one of the interesting things that you touched on but didn't sort of elaborate is the fact that the reason there is no debate about any of these issues is because effectively Angela Merkel and particularly Wolfgang Schäuble have been very careful not to actually ever say anything to the German people about the real nature of the euro crisis and all the structural changes that have to be brought in. She's been extremely careful since the start of the crisis to actually disguise this, and I wouldn't like to say that she's lied, but she's certainly been very economical with the truth.
You're absolutely right, but that should not prevent her challenger, Steinbrück, to challenge her on that and raise these issues, which he tried in the debate. But again, it is very hard because the Social Democrats have largely supported her policies on the euro crisis. Plus, both the trade unions and big business benefit a lot from the current situation. So neither the employers nor the workers have any interest in reforming the German model right now. So again, the major parties have no interest in politicizing the euro crisis because they don't disagree, and it caters to both their core constituencies to keep the status quo.
Back to you, Gordon. One might have expected a sort of a swing to the right, you know, a sort of a hardline nationalist party. But that hasn't really posed much of a threat as yet, has it?
It has not really, and I'm very happy about this, to be very honest, because I think in this situation the risk has always been there, and I would also say it's not gone, it's never gone forever. So I'm very happy that actually the party that has came up from nothing is the AfD, which is more a party of professors, of let's say intellectuals, but they are not such popular personalities that they could really achieve more than a couple of percent of the voters.
But Gordon, let's face facts, they were just dull as dishwasher. The problem with the AfD is they're so dull they would bore people into submission. They are really, really dull.
Tania, Timothy Garton-Ash recently made the point that one difference between the current generation of Polis and the generation who first sketched out the European Monetary Union was that they'd had more of the horrors of the 20th century in living memory. What is left of that moral impetus today?
I mean, it's true. It is very hard to convince the younger generation that Europe is about war and peace. I think this kind of experience of two major world wars that have devastated the continent twice and the importance of European integration, of overcoming the war trenches in Europe, that is probably not that relevant anymore to the younger generation. That doesn't mean that Europe doesn't stand for something more than economics. I think a lot of the younger people are aware of the freedoms that come with Europe, that is the freedom of traveling, of studying and working in other countries, but also more broadly speaking, the political values for which Europe stands and which the European Union has lately built its identity on, also with regard to deciding which states are to qualify for membership in the European Union.
Gordon, a final question to you. Does Steinbrück, who seems outspoken, quick-witted, does he pose any real threat to Merkel?
Well, nobody knows. We were discussing that many of the voters are deciding in the last moments, on the last meters. So there is always a chance that something would change. After the TV debate, we have witnessed a slight change in popularity. So that is for the first time in the election campaign that something was really changing in that way. But generally speaking, I would be surprised if the name of the German Chancellor would not be Angela Merkel after the election, because the polls say that she's really in front and she's really leading the whole thing, and most of the Germans really want her to be Chancellor again.
I thank the three of you for your contributions to our little wireless program. Sachin Das, economist and author, Professor Tanja Bertzel from the Otto Suhr Institute of Political Science, and Gordon Rapinski is a political reporter and editor at Der Spiegel. Up next, stories, struggles and secrets from Timor-Leste. This is LNL on RN.